You're listening to the Untaming Podcast.
We were the child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hey, hey, thank you for coming back to hear episode 7 of the Untaming Podcast. I really hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Nadine Artemis. I'm still trying to figure out the D-Minder app that she recommended. I'm sure it'll come in handy when I am back in New Zealand and dealing with the harsh rays of the sun there. Next week, we will hear from Cornelia Holton. She is the CEO of Korukai Herb Farms, a permaculturist, a wild food foraging guide, a qualified Montessori teacher, and is home educating her two children. But today we will hear from Kate Soulsby. This episode will be a similar style to the one with Phoenix a couple of weeks ago. Originally from New Zealand and currently living in Melbourne, Australia, Kate will give us a glimpse into her life as a new mother and how she came upon the knowledge that connected us.
Year-old Kate Soulsby was born at home in Pawataha Nui and grew up in Whanganui, New Zealand, and currently lives in Melbourne, Australia with her partner Simon and 7-week-old Taj. Last night she had 6 hours of sleep. She hasn't had any breakfast yet, but a coffee will see her through the interview. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Emily. It's really nice to be here.
We first connected through social media last year. Like me, you're also planning to move back home to New Zealand. How long have you been in Australia and what brought you there?
It's been 13 years that I've been in Australia now. So I moved over as a 20-year-old with another couple of friends when we all graduated as chefs. And we thought, let's go to the big smoke and make some money and work in a big city. And it was a plan for moving here for 1 year and then moving back to Whanganui after that. And that never eventuated. I loved Melbourne and I haven't quite made it home yet. So still on the cards. But it definitely turned into a much longer stint in Melbourne than I ever planned it to.
So it was to Melbourne and you've stayed in Melbourne or have you moved around in Australia?
I've lived in Melbourne, but I have travelled a bit. I lived in a van for 6 months and drove right up the East Coast and picked fruit and did a bit of farm work and that kind of thing to see more of Australia. Mm-hmm. I've travelled quite a bit around the world, but yeah, Melbourne's always been my home base.
What's your current living situation? Are you renting or in a house, an apartment, something else?
Yeah, so we rent a really nice house in a leafy suburb about 45 minutes out of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Where we moved to about 3 years ago, we were in a north where, you know, everyone lives in share houses and stuff, but we decided that we wanted a bit more space to garden and to have some more animals and just to be out of the city a bit. So we've moved out here. We live in a really lovely little house that we're renting. It's on 1 acre, so we've got a bit of space. It's a big wood burner fire, which was something we were really looking for the Melbourne winters get pretty chilly. So it's really nice to have an awesome fire. My partner's an arborist, so he brings home lots of firewood. We've got a pretty nice garden here and some chooks. And we had a couple of sheep, but we just gave them away because they got a bit noisy. And a cat and a dog. And, a lovely little homestead, I guess we'd like to imagine it being.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So will you take your cat and dog back to New Zealand?
We will, yep. And they'll probably be the biggest expense of moving.
Yeah, we have the same thing. We're taking our dogs back with us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what else are you gonna do, right? They're part of the family, of course.
Exactly, they sure are. What were you doing before you got pregnant with Taj and through your pregnancy? Were you working?
I was, yeah. I was working full-time in two different jobs, two social enterprises. So I've pretty much always worked with food or coffee or people. My last two jobs were I was running a non-profit vegetable market where we'd set up a market in public housing and sell off vegetables really cheaply so that people could make sure that they were able to provide their families with healthy options rather than, a lot of the time cheap food for immigrant families and stuff with lots of children is unfortunately like not healthy food. So yeah. Was running that market and I was also working at an online organic veggie box service as customer service manager.
Excellent.
So it was a lot. It was quite tiring. I was quite tired a lot through my pregnancy. Was really looking forward to finishing up working because it was at least 40 hours a week, probably 45 most weeks. Oh, wow. And then because we're out of town, I was commuting 45 minutes to one job and an hour to the other. So it was also a lot of driving every week as well.
Yeah, that's exhausting. I don't envy you that. Wow.
Yeah. And especially as soon as I was heavily pregnant, being in a car stuck in traffic was just not comfortable, not cool.
No way.
So yeah, I was super glad to finish up work and not be doing that anymore.
So have you completely left your job? It's not maternity leave?
I've left one of them. So the more full-time one that I was at for 4 years, I was kind of had felt like I'd done my time as the customer service manager. It was sort of, you know, same thing every day, really. So after 4 years, I was like, yep, done with this. And knew that I was planning to get pregnant. So kept that job until Christmas and then finished up and won't be going back there. But I may go back to the community grocer, especially probably just to do some part-time work for them or something. I can do some work from home. So if that becomes a financial necessity, then I probably will do that because it's also a really lovely company that I thoroughly enjoyed working for. So, yeah, that's on the cards too.
Oh, lovely. So it was our mutual desires for an undisturbed birth that connected us. Tell us about that journey for you. What led you to that decision? What was your pregnancy like and the birth itself?
Yeah, sure. So being born at home myself and being brought up in a family that was very birth positive, always spoke about birth and children and all of that in a really positive light, I always assumed that I would have home births. There was never any other option for me for that. I just never considered anything else. I remember going to home birth meetings and groups with my mum when I was really little. And so just always assumed that that would be what I would do. But in Australia, birth culture is quite different to New Zealand. Home births are not government funded. Well, there are some public home birth programs through hospitals, but you have to live really close to certain hospitals and fit in a certain set of parameters and things that we wouldn't live in that zone, so that wasn't an option. So private midwifery would have been an option, and it would have been my choice. It's very expensive. But, you know, I think midwives deserve to be paid what they deserve. If the government's not going to subsidise it, that's, you know, a different issue. I think it's totally worth every cent and we would have saved for that. But not long before I got pregnant and thinking about my choices, I was sort of going, you know what, I just really don't want anyone managing my birth and I don't want anyone touching me or telling me what to do. And am I going to pay someone $6,000 and ask them to sit in the spare room and read a book the whole time I give birth? Because that seems kind of crazy. And then I stumbled across the Free Birth Society podcast when I was looking for something a bit more natural after listening to a very mainstream birth story podcast and being kind of horrified about how normal people were finding these experiences that I was listening to going, wow, that's traumatic. And after I think probably one episode, I was just like, oh my God, this is what I want. This is amazing. I didn't know that was an option. I didn't know people did that, but it all makes sense. That's totally perfect. And once I started talking about it, I spoke to a friend of mine who's a midwife and she goes, oh yeah, I've got a friend who had a free birth last week, and sort of realized that it actually is a bit more common than I could have ever imagined. And, you know, obviously people are just aren't really talking about these things. So once I got that in my mind, there was no other way. I was like, yeah, totally, that's what I'm doing. That's awesome. I told a couple of friends and they were like, yeah, I can imagine you doing that. Sure. I mentioned it to my mum. She was like, oh yeah, okay. Like I wasn't pregnant at this point, so she didn't say too much about it. Told her again when I was pregnant. She was pretty cool about it, actually.
Oh, good.
We talked through a couple of hers and dad's fears. The main one was hemorrhaging because she had a pretty bad bleed after having me.
Okay,
and yeah. I think in hindsight it probably wasn't that bad, but you know how when doctors and midwives and stuff start to get a bit stressed out, and you know, it's the first time dad had seen birth, so he had thought it was quite bad and he didn't want that for me. So we talked about that and how I would manage that situation, and then they were like, okay, cool, well, you know, we trust you, that's your decision, good for you. So that was pretty cool to have my parents on board with that.
Yeah, that's tremendous.
Yeah. We decided not to tell Simon's parents till after the fact because they were a little bit more like Simon's mum would say things like, oh, I really just think you should get just one scan. And I was like, well, did you have any scans with your boys? And she was like, oh, no. Like, well, they turned out fine, didn't they? So I kind of thought she probably wasn't ready to handle the whole free birth situation. So no, we didn't tell them until after the fact, and they were really pleased that we chose not to, so that's good.
Yeah.
And pregnancy was, other than feeling really tired because I was working a lot and commuting, like I said, it was great. I didn't get any morning sickness. I felt really good the whole time. I didn't really have any, you know, problems, pregnancy symptoms that were an issue to me. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was winter for most of it, so, you know, just sort of being snuggly and warm and spending lots of time.
Oh, cozy, yeah.
Yeah, cozying up and trying to find clothes that fit over a growing belly and things. Yeah. And then by the time I got really big, it was summer, which was awesome. So a lot of like floating in the river that's near us. And we went to a folk festival, which was really cool. And just, yeah, you know, it was beautiful. I enjoyed being pregnant. It was a great pregnancy. I really can't complain. I certainly didn't have any issues at all.
So good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was due on the 10th of February, or that was my putting dates into the internet guest date. I'd actually thought that I'd go a bit later than that because there was a full moon on the 19th of February. So that was my guest date, which would have been about 42 weeks. I was convinced I was going to go really late. I think I was having heard lots of people's stories about how they get to these last weeks of pregnancy and are just like, you know, counting down the hours, wishing it was over because they expected that they would have had a baby by then. I was sort of putting my expectations really long so that I wouldn't get to that stage, really. I was like, sure, I was going to go to at least 42 weeks and, you know, anything before that would be a surprise. And it totally was because he was born at 40 and 5, which is, you know, an absolutely perfect gestation. I didn't know he was a boy, obviously, because we didn't have any scans or tests or anything. The only time I saw a doctor through my pregnancy was we flew home to New Zealand for my little brother's wedding when I was 35 weeks pregnant. And to travel at that stage of pregnancy, you need a doctor's note. So I did find through free birth groups and other alternative people on the internet, I found a doctor who I know would be supportive of my choices because I wasn't really willing to just turn up to a clinic and have to fight someone about my decisions of, you know, what do you mean you haven't seen a doctor and you're 35 weeks pregnant, you don't have any records, and how is that possible? So saw a lovely doctor who used to be a home birth GP. He's got to be probably like 80. I think it'll be a massive loss to the medical community when he finally retires because he's just a super lovely guy who was really supportive of my decision. I said, oh, so I hear you support free birth. And he's like, well, I can't really come right out and say that. To be fair, he said, I support home birth with a midwife. I think that's the safest way to give birth. But I support women's choices and I trust women's bodies and you do what you're going to do and that's fine. And I was like, yeah, cool. You trust birth. Like, that's awesome. So,
wow, that's amazing to hear from like a doctor in his 80s. It sounds like you know, Michelle O'Dont, the French physician, he's in his 80s as well, I think. Yeah.
Well, I guess for the vast majority of his career, it would have been completely normal. Like he attended all these home births and, you know, he's just, he's seen a lot of natural normal births, I guess. And it's sort of only in, I think, more recent times where the fear culture around it has kind of ramped up a bit, I suppose. So it was really refreshing to find such a lovely doctor that I can trust like that. So he wrote me a lovely letter and said that he'd seen me, did a couple of blood tests and stuff because he said that he'd really like to know what my iron levels and stuff were before he signed me off to fly, because he wouldn't just sign me off blind. So we did that, and I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. I'm happy to know these kind of things. Yeah. I'm not like, you know, 100% anti-medical establishment. I just didn't really feel like I needed those things that much. But, you know, that was really interesting, and I had great levels on everything, like perfect iron, and all other vitamin levels and everything were really good. So that was awesome to know. He wrote me a letter, and we flew to New Zealand, and nobody asked to see it, of course. Probably didn't need to see a doctor at all, but anyway, that's fine. Yeah, so getting to the birth, it was, so I woke up one morning at about 4:30 in the morning, having small cramps, like period-like kind of cramps, and Simon was getting ready to go to work. He gets up about 5:45. An hour or so later, he was getting up, and I said, yeah, I might be calling you back from work today. It could be baby day. And he was like, well, shall I go to work? And I was like, yeah, this could be days. Like, it's nothing yet. It's, you know, I have no idea, but you know, totally labor denial. I think everyone seems to, most people seem to have labor denial. It's such a weird state to not.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no line, right? Am I in labor? Am I not in labor? What is this? Will this go on for weeks? Will this go on for hours? Like, who knows? So I wasn't getting too excited. I was saying to him, like, yeah, this could be days. Go to work. It's totally fine. And it was a whole day where I was trying to work out whether I could consider it labor or not. Definitely, like, contractions by sort of mid-morning were 5 minutes apart and, you know, lasting for up to a minute or more. I was talking to my mum, and she was like, yeah, I guess that could be labor. I don't know. I told mum and dad that maybe they'd have a grandchild by the end of the day. I told Simon.
Where were your parents? Are they in Australia as well, or were you?
No, they're in New Zealand. So I was just texting them and letting them know what's going on. Yeah. Mum would have, I think she would have really liked to be here for the birth, but I just didn't want anyone there really, let alone my mum, I think, because I was just a bit scared that she'd be nervous for me and bring an energy to the space that I didn't think would have been useful, really. No. So she had asked me, I think even before I was pregnant, like, will I be there at your birth? And I was like, probably not, sorry. I also remember how she'd spoken about her mother hadn't wanted to be at her birth, but her mother-in-law had, and she'd spoken about how that had been, you know, there'd been really annoying times within that. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. Like, you'd need a really special kind of relationship with your mother to want to have her at the birth. Yeah. So yeah, that wasn't something that I wanted, but obviously it was keeping them well in the loop, because we are really close. And
do you think now that you've had Taj, do you think you'd want her there for another birth in the future?
No. I actually think the best thing for her to do in the future would be probably to look after Taj while I give birth to the next
right,
one.
Yeah.
As I'll get into it, I always thought I'd be the kind of person who'd have my kids at my birth, but it definitely wasn't a calm birth. So if that's the way I birth, then yeah, I don't really think it's probably a space that I'd want to have kids in. So yeah, I think it'd be a great thing for her to do would be to look after Taj next time I birth. So if we're in New Zealand, you know, that'll probably be her job. And maybe popping in at early labor. Obviously, I could have had someone there in early labor. I labored, I don't know if you can call it labor, so let's say, yeah, pre-labor. All throughout the day, I finally made a birthing mala necklace that I bought all these beautiful beads for, and thought that I'd make this 108 bead meditation necklace that I was going to wear through the birth. And I'd had most of the stuff to make it for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and hadn't got around to it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to sit in bed and I'm going to make this necklace, and I'm going to put my good intentions into every knot that I tie. And that was a really beautiful way to pass the time. I did make a beautiful necklace. It was quite a cold day for February, so I was able to stay in bed, which was really nice. Definitely wasn't able to get any more sleep. I thought that I'd, you know, try and get some sleep, but that didn't happen. I spoke to my friend. I've got a friend who was possibly going to come to my birth. She was the most supportive person of my choices to free birth. She's training as a nurse and possibly going to do nursing midwifery. We're really close, and I'd asked her at some point through my pregnancy if she wanted to come to my birth, if that's what I wanted at the time. And she was like, yeah, that would be absolutely amazing. I'd love to. And Simon had indicated that he would really like to have at least one other person there. So it was 100% my decision to free birth, but he was just on board with what I wanted, basically. I guess he knew there was no point arguing about it and knew that it was my decision, and he was like, okay, cool, all right, is there going to be anyone else there at all? And I was like, well, not really. I mean, that's kind of the whole point, is that I don't feel like I want anyone else to be there. But I totally get from your point of view that, you know, you don't know anything about birth. You haven't seen birth. This is probably pretty full on for you. I think he really did feel responsible, and I had to keep explaining to him that, you know, one of the reasons that I'm choosing to free birth is that it's mother-led birth and that I'm the responsible party, and I'm not asking you to be responsible for anything. And unless I'm unconscious, in which case call the ambulance, I'm going to be able to tell you what to do. And in every other situation, I'm going to be in control of that, and I will tell you how you need to react to that if it's something that you don't know what to do. So, you know, we talked about certain situations, but he didn't really want to know that much, and I was fine with that. So he would have rather have our friend says there, but she ended up on placement for her nursing course the week that Taj was born. And I spoke to her the afternoon when I was in pre-labor, and she was like, well, depending on the time, I could come out there and I could just go straight from your house to placement, but she had to go to placement, otherwise she wouldn't have been able to pass her course. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll call you later if I decide that I want you to come out, pack a little bag before you go to bed, and, you know, be ready to come out if we call you. And I've been having contractions all day, and I spoke to her on the phone for about an hour, and the whole time we were talking, I didn't have or I didn't notice a single contraction. And when I hung up from her, I was like, ah, that's how you know that it's pre-labor, because contractions can totally stop when you're distracted.
Ah, right, yeah.
Which is really interesting, because if it's real labor, there's no distracting yourself from them. I don't know whether they completely stop or I just didn't notice. It was quite trippy. I was like, oh wow, that's like a whole hour that I didn't have any contractions. So anyway, so the afternoon goes on, Simon gets home from work, we had dinner. Normally I was still sort of just, I was totally comfortable just having sort of regular contractions throughout the evening. Had a bath after dinner, a nice candlelit bath. That was still when ambiance and candles and things were important to me.
That beautiful.
Yeah, I really thought that that's how my whole birth would be, that I'd light all these candles and that I'd have fairy lights and lovely music, and I had all these playlists ready. And as soon as like real labor kicked in, I didn't care about any of that.
So you just shut it all out.
Totally. And I had a friend who told me this as well. She was like, you really, it doesn't matter that much where you are or what's around you, because you're going to be so internal anyway. And she was very right. It really was. So I went to bed after dinner about 9:30 and realized within minutes that I wasn't going to be staying in bed at all. Contractions were ramping up to a point then when I couldn't stay lying down. So I got back up and Simon stayed in bed. He'd been climbing trees all day, so he was completely tired. And I thought that it would be a really good idea if he could have a couple of hours sleep, because I thought we'd probably both be up all night. Mm-hmm. So I went downstairs at that point, because I had been sort of on all fours and child's pose and leaning on the side of our bed and moaning what I thought was quietly. Went downstairs. Our whole house is pretty open plan, so we're sort of sleeping upstairs at a key kind of level, so there's no doors anywhere. So I was downstairs in the lounge, had lit some candles, and I think it was about midnight that I heard Simon say, do you want me to come down there? And I was like, yeah, you should come down. Things are kind of ramping up a bit. I said, did you get some sleep? And he was like, no, you've been really noisy for the last 3 hours. I was like, oh, I thought I was being really quiet. Sorry. So that's pretty much for me where time starts to get really trippy. Yeah, so it's about midnight. After that, I have no idea of linear time. Simon said the same thing for him, that time got really trippy. So I remember looking at the clock, but not being able to make sense of the time, just being like, wow, that was 2 hours. It felt like 2 minutes, or vice versa. Like things were really wacky in time. So not having anyone else there, I've got really no idea how long, or kind of the progression of labor. I've got no idea how long I was pushing for or anything. It was a bit of a blur. Obviously things kind of just got progressively more intense. I was in the bath for quite a while. Simon lit a fire for us, which was really bizarre in February because that's like the hottest month in Melbourne. And it was this really crazily cold day. And all through my pregnancy, I'd been really worried that it was going to be this code red fire danger day, because historically this week in February that he was due had been when all of the major bushfires had been. And it could have been 44 degrees and we live in a bushfire area. And I was like, the only thing that can sabotage my home birth is a total bushfire and us having to leave and not being allowed to be on our property. And then it was 8 degrees and we lit the fire. It was so bizarre.
It's like the opposite of like what you were fearing.
Totally. It's so weird. So I'd also like had plans that maybe I'd birth in the garden. I've got a beautiful outdoor bath, which I wasn't really sure how it would work because there's steps down to it. And I was like, nah, I'm probably not going to want to walk down steps or around the garden that much, but it was so cold that was out of the question anyway. So we lit the fire, we had candles going, there were no other lights on, it was really dark other than just this candlelit fireside lounge. And then that was the problem with the bath, because we've got this really large triangular spa bath, so I didn't, you know, bother getting a birth pool or anything, because if I wanted to birth in the water, I was had this amazing spa bath, which I could easily squat in and spread my legs and float and, you know, just be in pretty much any position in. And it was perfect for birthing, but the air was so cold that the water would be warm and then I'd have a contraction and I'd stand up because I couldn't sit still through them. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get really cold because the air was so cold and my shoulders would be cold. And so I didn't really last long in the bath at all, because I think I felt too contained. With the jumping up and down, and it's definitely wasn't one of those people that you see in videos like floating through their contractions in the water. I really thought that I might be, but no, definitely wasn't. At some point, like, threw off the birthing necklace that I'd made and was like, get this thing off my body. So I spent most of my labor in the lounge, where we'd put down some towels on the ground, and I'd bought like a cheap shower curtain, which we didn't end up using. And I said to Simon later, I was like, why didn't we use that? And he said, you didn't want it. It was too plasticky. I was like, okay, yep, that makes sense. Don't remember saying that, but that sounds like something I'd say. So yeah, mostly just in the lounge. I did go back to the bath at some point, must have been really close to transition, because I remember being kind of crazy when I was in the bath the second time. The window had blown the shower curtain onto my bum and it had stuck on there and it was really cold and I was like, get this thing off me! Screaming at Simon, and he was trying to keep me warm, and then I was hot and then I was cold, and then you know, as you do in labor, like he was so amazing, putting things on my shoulders, taking them off again when I was yelling, and telling me to breathe when all I wanted to do was scream. And I was definitely really noisy, and we hadn't said anything to either of the neighbors. They're quite far away, like both the houses are a good, I don't know, a few hundred meters away. So we figured it was fine, but I also hadn't anticipated that I could possibly be as noisy as I was. Screaming, yelling, swearing. Definitely not a calm birth at all. I really had thought that, I guess I had this idea that if I was completely undisturbed in birth, then what I really wanted was to like experience this full flow of hormones that your body creates to make birth be the experience that it is. Like the most natural possible state of birth is pretty high. Like your hormones are going to get you pretty high.
Yeah.
And I assumed within that if there'd be a bit more pain protection, I guess, from those hormones. And I was definitely high. I was completely out of it, but I still hadn't anticipated how much it was going to hurt still.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I don't know whether I had a doula or somebody who would have, maybe if I'd given more consideration to pain management techniques or something, whether it would have made much difference. I feel like if somebody had been trying to tell me to do something other than Simon. If it hadn't been him, I probably just would have screamed at them to get out of my face.
Yeah.
Anyone telling me, you know, try this thing or try counting to, you know, whatever the things are, I just couldn't imagine anyone else even being there, really. So yeah, there was a lot of me moving around. Once I got out of the bath and back into the lounge, I remember being really, really tired between contractions, and so was Simon, and just like wishing that there was a snooze button on labor so that I could have just had a little rest in between contractions, and I'd lie down on the ground and then another contraction would start, but I'd need his help to get up. So I'd be like, help, 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 and stick my arm out, and he'd come running over and get me up off the ground. And I'd go from like on all fours to leaning on the coffee table to all fours on the couch to running over to the staircase and hanging off the stairs to hanging off his neck to hanging off his waist to down on the ground to putting my hands on his knees, all within like a 1 minute contraction, and then back onto the ground and kind of collapse for the break until the next one. Wow. And I don't know how long we did that for, but I felt like a Tasmanian devil or something, just like whirling around the room. Like I must have done so many movements. Every contraction I'd probably try 10 different.
Yeah, it's amazing though that you were like, you were able to be just so in yourself to just like, you were just unleashing. Yeah. You could just go into
anything. Absolutely.
Yeah, just be totally natural and no
inhibition. I never would have been able to do that in a hospital or a birthing center or anything like that. And no. I remember thinking at some point how wild it would have been to have to listen to other women giving birth at the same time. Like if I was in a birthing ward or yeah. something, it just would have been the craziest thing to hear other people's birthing noises while I was in the middle of my labor. So I was just so happy to be at home. There wasn't a single point, even though it was crazy intense and nothing like I could have, I mean, you can't possibly anticipate what birth is going to be like before you've been there, but there wasn't a moment where I was scared or didn't feel like it was right or thought that I should be somewhere else. I definitely didn't have any of that. I was so in it. There wasn't even time to, I definitely wasn't in a thinking brain. I wasn't ever thinking like, you know, is this normal? Is this good? Should I be progressing like this? It was just happening, which is awesome. It's exactly as I wanted to happen. So obviously I wasn't thinking about calling my friend to come out either. You know, there's no way I could have looked at a phone or done something as normal as texting or calling someone to tell them to come over. So that didn't happen, which was totally fine. I was really happy with it just being us. And no idea what time I started getting really pushy and, you know, knowing that the baby was really close. And I remember trying to see if I could feel his head, because I really felt like I should be able to feel the baby's head at this point. I was like, definitely feels like something's come through. And tried to put my fingers in and see if I could feel his head, and I couldn't feel anything. And I was like, oh, that's annoying. I really feel like I should be further along than that at this point. Mm. And I think maybe I did that again a little bit later, and then kind of realized maybe he's a little bit stuck. I don't know what made me think that. It wasn't, it didn't feel like a bad thing. I just felt like, okay, I've got to try something different here. So I had been sort of mostly on my knees with my hands on the couch. So my knees on the floor and my arms and my hands on the couch, sort of in an all fours position, but with my arms and elbows out in front of me. And I realized I needed a bit more than that. So I got into like I tried a deep squat, and then I tried a runner's lunge. Mm-hmm. And neither of those positions felt good, but I knew I had to do it. They were more painful than where I was before, but I knew I had to push my body through that. And something was just telling me that that's what I needed to do. And it was. And then I felt he definitely moved after that, and things happened a lot faster. So however he was a little bit stuck, that helped. He moved around. And it was on. I remember going, baby's coming, baby's coming, baby's coming. And Simon was probably a couple of meters away from me at that point. Because I guess once all of the main contractions are kind of done and you're in transition, then I didn't need him quite as much. Or maybe he was behind me. I do remember being so out of it at some point that I couldn't see anything. And I was going, where are you? And he was like, I'm right behind you. Here's my hand. And like put his hand out and I held his hand. And I was like, okay, you're there. And I can't see you. That's bizarre. But I guess tunnel vision, like total internal vision. I couldn't see anything. My body was definitely pushing, like fetal ejection reflex was totally happening. But it was really freaking hurting, and I was not going to be patiently breathing that baby out. I was like, okay, this is coming out. And I pushed with my body and I roared that baby out, and wow. I ended up birthing him. I was squatting or like kneeling on my heels, so I had my knees really wide, both of my feet under my bum, and at one hand back behind me, so I was sort of arched back and pushing him out that way. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for Simon, I'd made an L shape with the couch and the coffee table, so I had something solid and something soft to hang on to when I needed it, and I was like, my body was faced directly into this corner, and I don't think that Simon could probably see him get born at all, because I birthed him into this little tiny corner of the coffee table and the couch and the rug straight onto the ground. And I did try and catch him, but I think I sort of caught his body as his face planted into the rug, but you know, from a height of like 10 centimeters. So
yeah,
he was fine. And he was, I had thought that it was a girl. So as he was being born, I was calling him a she, and I was going, come on, baby, she's coming, she's coming. Didn't know he was a boy. He was born face first onto the rug. Kind of caught his body. His umbilical cord was wrapped loosely around his neck, like sort of over his shoulders and around the back of his neck, not as a full circle, but once around his body as well. So I picked him up and sort of looped that off him, put him on my chest, said to Simon, check the time, take a photo. Which he did. He checked the time. It was 5:15 in the morning. So it had been about 8 hours of active labor, which is pretty amazing for the first time labor. I think in the same way that I'd expected a long gestation, I had prepared myself for a really long labor in case that was the case, because I didn't want to be that person that got to 12 hours and was like, oh, is this not over yet? I can't believe it. So yeah. I really thought, like, you know, 24 to 48 hours is normal and expecting that. So I was pretty surprised that he was born so fast, which was cool.
I guess that also has, you were so confident and you were prepared and you were listening to your body as well. You were able to do all the moves that you wanted to do. You knew to move into like the right position when you felt like maybe he was stuck. So
yeah, totally. Yeah, there was no, I feel like people can definitely get stuck or stalled in their labor when they get distracted or they've got other people around them, or, you know, someone turns up and things go backwards for them. And, hang on a second, let's see what this guy wants. Where were we?
We were, I guess you were just saying how you were surprised about it taking only 8 hours.
Yeah, pleasantly surprised. Then I guess the third stage of birth is probably, I hate to use the word, but if you're going to say the most dangerous, then I guess that could be one way of putting it. It was definitely the part that Simon was most nervous about, was the placenta and the bleeding and making sure that I was okay afterwards.
Was he worried about that just because of, like, from your mum's experience?
I don't think so. I think he was worried about that because that was like the one thing that we'd spoken about in depth, and maybe because I sort of potentially anticipated that. And I thought that would be the one bit that he would need to know, you know, what's considered a normal passing out and what's a problematic pass out, because, you know, it's not uncommon to pass out for a few seconds after giving birth and it'd be totally okay. And obviously that would be a really scary situation for someone who doesn't really have a medical background or know anything about it. So so we had talked about that. And obviously once you've got a brand new baby in your arms, you're really not too aware of I was aware, but I was definitely like, you know, staring into his face and you don't feel any pain at all. So I was really,
yeah, no problem.
Get him to be quiet. Yeah. So after he was born, the placenta wasn't born for about 2 hours. And there was quite a bit of blood. I was prepared for quite a bit of blood and knew that blood didn't necessarily mean emergency, that it was quite normal to bleed a fair bit after birth because your body does make a whole lot of extra blood and it's okay for some of that to come out afterwards. And it's really a lot more about how you feel than how much blood has come out, because I don't think that you can really judge every woman the same and say, oh, 500 mils of blood is equals hemorrhage, because it may for one person and it totally may not for another person. So for me, it was much more about how I felt. I was feeling totally fine. I was really exhausted and really tired. So he was born at 5:15. This was getting on to 7 o'clock in the morning. And I really wanted to just be able to get cleaned up and go upstairs to bed and snuggle up with my baby, because it's cold in the house and I was uncomfortable. And if I was, I would sit on the couch, but I'd bleed through all the towels that we had. So then I'd sit down on the ground and I'd get someone to help me up, and nothing was really working. I went into the bathroom and got Simon to help me into the shower to see if that would help the placenta come out. It didn't. Then I tried sitting on the toilet. That didn't help either. It just got bloody little footprints all through the house.
Oh, no.
which is totally fine. It's birth. And so we came back to the lounge and I was like, okay, I remember reading about a midwife on Instagram who swore by a postpartum leg massage, and she said that she'd give her clients a really nice relaxing leg massage to help the placenta come out, and also that it energetic work can be quite useful for the placenta. So to, you know, to thank the placenta for the work that it's done and to make sure that you're complete with your birth and that you're not still holding on to it and that kind of thing. So Simon got some massage oil and sponge cleaned some of the blood off my legs and sat down on the ground and gave me a leg massage, and I closed my eyes and thanked Tazza's placenta and said that he was here safely now and that it had done a great job, but it could come out now and that we were all good. And funnily, every time I'd shut my eyes, Simon would go, are you okay? Don't go to sleep. Are you okay? Don't pass out. And I was like, dude, I'm fine. I'm trying to like meditate here. But anyway, that worked an absolute charm. And like 1 minute later, I stood up, he held a bowl, and it just plopped out into the bowl with quite a lot of blood and blood clots and things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was perfect. It was whole. It was, it was born. It was fine. And I could clean myself up and go to bed. So I think Simon helped me into the shower and got a bit cleaned up. Felt really woozy. He definitely had to like sort of hold me to help me upstairs, but I was good. I went to bed and spent the day staring at Taj and breastfeeding and just being a family for the first time. We totally didn't sleep until I don't know what time the next night. By that point, I'd had maybe 3 hours sleep since Sunday, and this is like Wednesday night. But, you know, you're so high from birth, you don't need sleep at that point. No. Simon needed sleep. He took longer to recover from the birth than I did. For the next like 3 days, he kind of had this birth hangover, which was really funny because I was totally fine and felt, I mean, you know, I get all the hormones to help, but I felt amazing. And he was really tired and sluggish and just took him a little while to get over it, which like physically it had been really hard on him because I'd spent hours like hanging off him. And mentally, I think it had been really full on for him as well, just being the only person there and seeing me go through something so intense and so noisy and so, you know, a lot of just really wild birth, I guess. So, yeah.
That sounds like so wonderful. Such a wonderful way to bring your son into the world.
Totally. It couldn't have been more natural. It was definitely a lot more wild than, I mean, I wanted it to be wild, but I still thought that I would be calmer than that. But, you know, that's cool. I birth like a banshee. And that's
You unleash like your wild inner woman.
Yes, absolutely. And I think I needed to. Like, that's what got him born, and it was awesome. And you know, this is why I think that in the future I probably wouldn't be the kind of person who'll have my other kids, unless I think I'm going to do it really differently, or unless the second birth's totally different, and then, you know, the third birth I can have the kids there. Like, I love the idea of having kids at birth, but I just feel like it would have been really distracting, and it also would have been really full on for them, like for anyone to see that. I was also wondering like what my friend would have done if she'd come to be the doula. Like she wouldn't have been able to sit on the couch because I was just running around like crazy. She would have just had to stand in the kitchen for 6 hours and stay out of the way. So yeah, I'm so glad it was just me and Simon.
Yeah. It just sounds so wonderful.
The only thing that I would probably change would be to have somebody turn up afterwards and help with the cleanup. Like we really thought that we wanted to be totally isolated for days afterwards. And in hindsight, actually that very first day and second day is probably the time that having someone come over would have been really good. Because that was the time that neither of us could really cope with that much at all. Like, you know, we had some meals prepared and things, but the house got crazily messy and we were just trying to keep up with enough washing to have towels and nappies and things. And yeah, it took us quite a while to get the house actually cleaned up proper. But that's totally fine. You know, so that doesn't matter.
Well, I was just going to ask how your first few weeks of motherhood have been, like in terms of breastfeeding, elimination, communication, sleeping.
Yeah. So completely amazing. I feel like I did prepare quite well for postpartum, because I feel like unless you're quite forward thinking or you know a bit about birth, a lot of people spend a lot of time thinking about their birth and very little about their postpartum time. So yeah, I felt like we were pretty well prepared. We had lots of food in the freezer and had set quite good boundaries with people about dropping in and, you know, waiting for us to let them know that we were ready for visitors and that kind of thing. And it continued to be this unseasonably cold week, which was awesome. So I could stay in bed with Taj, which was just so nice because we're upstairs in the summer. Often it's too hot to be in our bedroom or be upstairs at all. So I was a bit worried about not being able to hang out in bed with him, which I really wanted to do. So that was perfect. He breastfed really well, like we didn't have any problems with it at all.
Oh, excellent.
Latched straight away, was just a champ, fed like a champ. Prior, I guess maybe while I was pregnant, I'd found out about elimination communication, which is the idea of infant potty training is one word for it, or natural infant hygiene is probably a better term, because potty training seems to confuse people and make them feel like you're forcing a child to do something that they don't want to do at a really young age. But it's really the idea that they're born instinctively knowing how to control their bodily functions and not wanting to mess themselves. And as a parent, you're meeting that need of theirs in the same way that you meet their other needs, that, you know, they need you to give them food and shelter and take them to the toilet and make sure they're the right temperature and all of these things. So it's just another thing that we do for him. And it's been absolutely amazing. Like from the day one, we were catching wheeze, mostly by timing. So when he'd wake up from a nap or wake up in the morning, obviously most people need to go to the toilet when they wake up in the morning. So we'd hold him over a sink or a bucket and we'd make a sound as a cue sound for him, and he would wee almost from the get-go. And seeing the look on Simon's face the first time he held him over the sink and made that noise and he weed on cue for him was just absolutely priceless. It's just the best thing. It makes you feel, it feels really magical because you've never seen it and no one's ever told you this is possible, and you're just like, holy shit, my entire life has been a lie.
Yeah.
it's so good. So I guess, he really quickly learned that was the thing to do. And I think in his 7 weeks, I've probably changed 3 pooey nappies. A lot more wet ones. It's a little bit harder to catch his signals for wheeze during the day. If I've got him in a carrier or something, I often miss them, but that's cool. Like the thing about it is it's communication. If you catch half of them and you're communicating with them about it, then that's the point. And, you know, we've washed a whole lot less nappies than we would have otherwise. It's just a really beautiful thing, and we've blown friends' minds. It's been really awesome to do it in front of people and then just go, oh my God. We took him camping when he was 3.5 weeks old. It was a long weekend and we went camping for the weekend, and that was just so easy because you just whip off his nappy. Like, we use cloth nappies as a backup during the day. and he wees, you put the nappy back on dry, and people are just like, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah.
It's really cool. And we were wearing nappies at nighttime as well, but the nappies were making him cry, and I think it was the Velcro or cry during changes. So he'd wake up, like make a little, either be a bit wriggly or make a little squirming noise, and I would wake up, take his nappy off, hold him over the bucket, he'd wee, but he'd cry because of the noise of the nappy or the nappy going on and off. And then Simon would wake up, and doing that four or five times a night was just getting really distracting. So I decided that the problem was the nappies, and if he was to just sleep on a towel, so we have a towel and a flat nappy laid on top of that in our bed that he sleeps on. So if there's an accident, it's no big deal. And he's dry most nights. I just wake up when he gets wriggly and he wees and we feed back to sleep. And it's amazing. Like he almost never cries. He's had a couple of nights where I've had to get up and walk him around a bit. Sometimes we get up and have a burp, but sometimes it's just totally fine to lie down and feed back to sleep straight away. So I feel like I'm awake for, you know, maybe four or five times a night, but only for 10 minutes at a time, because I'll often fall back asleep whilst feeding him as well. So it's been amazing. I wake up feeling rested. He is just an awesome little baby. It's been great. I mean, I feel like I set it up to be great. And I think if you do everything as naturally as you can, you've got the best chances possible of having a great postpartum and giving yourself a real good chance to have that as well. I had lots of nutritious foods, and I had, you know, planned to rest a lot, and I got outside in the sunshine when I could, and I had torn a little bit internally, so I was putting a balm that I'd made with some girlfriends as a mother blessing way, they had taken me to a permaculture farm where we'd made all these beautiful herbal things for my birth and my postpartum, and one of them was a really gorgeous balm. So I've been using that to heal my tear and going out in the sunshine and making sure I got fresh air and sunshine on it and sitting with him out in the sunshine, and it was just beautiful. I had a couple of friends come and visit, but everyone was really respectful of, like, you know, having short visits and just being there for the right amount of time and asking what they could do and hanging out washing and washing dishes. And it was beautiful, especially the first week. I just don't think that there's been a better week in my life. I think you can't top that newborn high, just staring into each other's eyes and getting to know each other. It's just so beautiful. It's been really amazing.
And it sounds like you set everything up to be as natural as possible, and that has therefore made everything easier for you and also for Taj.
Yeah, absolutely. He's had an easy ride. I mean, he was born at his home. He hasn't had to go anywhere. He didn't go in the car until he was like 3 weeks old. He has never had to deal with, you know, strangers, or he wasn't born on drugs. He's just, you know, had the most natural start to life that he could have. And yeah, that's how the best possible start, I think, for him.
Yeah. Well done. Congratulations for everything.
Thank you. Thanks.
What is a major misconception that you think people have about your lifestyle, in particular, like with reference to the wild way that you're raising Taj?
Well, we've definitely been called crazy hippies a few times, but I take that as a compliment. I feel like these days I probably wear my hippie on the inside a bit more, but I definitely used to look a bit more the part. But I'm, you know, that's, to me, that is I'm totally fine with being called a crazy hippie. That's a great compliment. I think people probably think that free birth is pretty dangerous and pretty crazy. I think that's a misconception, because I think if you understand and trust birth a lot, then that's the safest way you can give birth, is undisturbed. And I think, you know, yes, there can be complications, and it would be naive to think that it's going to go right 100% of the time for everybody, but I think actually having an unassisted free birth undisturbed is the safest way that you can give birth and the least likely to have complications. So, you know, we didn't tell a whole lot of people. I didn't tell people that I didn't think would support us in that. So we didn't have a lot of, didn't have to have a lot of conversations about that really. Misconceptions. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm lucky to be surrounded by people who sort of either are doing similar things to us or who think that it makes sense, you know, so I don't come up against a lot of people disagreeing with the way that we do things. I think it's funny that people think that somebody other than the mother has to deliver the baby. So once we did tell Simon's parents that there was no midwife. First we said the midwife didn't come, and then we were like, actually there was no midwife. And then they were like, what, so you delivered the baby? And they're from a small country town in Victoria, and pretty soon Simon was like the famous midwife of Harrietville. And everyone's going, Simon delivered the baby. And they were over at our house going, Simon delivered the baby. And I was on the couch breastfeeding, and I was like, hello, I delivered the baby. Yeah, thank you.
I'm the first one who touched my own baby.
Yeah, so I think that's a big misconception that somebody needs to deliver a baby, or that you know, whoever else is in the room other than the mother is going to be the person delivering that baby.
But, yeah, yeah.
no, you could totally do that yourself.
In regards to elimination communication, what do you think could be a change to make it more widely practiced and socially acceptable?
I mean, I think people just need to know about it to start. I think that that's really snowballing right now. I've heard people say it's going to be like the next baby-led weaning. You know, people are starting to find out about it. And I'm in a Facebook group, Elimination Communication Australia, which is a really great resource. And somebody had mentioned it in a couple of mainstream groups, and they just got a huge influx of people join the group. And I think it's just going to grow exponentially in the next couple of years. So I think seeing people do it, seeing people talk about it, I think really just actually knowing that that's an option. And all my friends who've seen Taj wee in a bucket as opposed to his nappy have gone, oh wow, I wish I knew about that with my first kid, or I'm so glad I know about that now because I'm totally going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know about socially acceptable. I mostly have been places where I can offer him the toilet in a car park or something, you know, squat down between the cars or something like that where there's not that many people watching.
Yeah.
It can be really challenging. I mean, especially I would imagine when you've got an older kid who's really not used to going in their nappy, but like being out is the biggest challenge to it. So I was out in a shopping center trying to buy a nursing bra, and you know, he does the cry that means I need to go wee right now, and I'm like, yeah, sorry buddy, there's nowhere for you to go, we're in Big W, like you're gonna have to wee in your nappy. So I guess that's gonna be harder with older kids as well. Maybe you can be prepared by taking containers and buckets and things, but I mean, you're not going to do that in the middle of a shopping center. Maybe in a car park or something's fine. But yeah, nappy backup is obviously good for that reason. I read a beautiful book called The Nappy Free Baby, or The Diaper Free Baby, which was where I got most of my information. And at that point, I was really keen to do it without nappies because it can totally be done, but it's definitely challenging if you're going to go out. You can do it at home. It's, you know, maybe you have a few misses, but you're more vigilant when, you know, they don't have a nappy on. You're really watching for those signs, and because you'd rather not clean up a mess. So I think you're more likely to catch more of his eliminations when you don't have a nappy on. Mm-hmm. It's funny because so many people that I've explained it to have gone, oh yeah, like a puppy. Like, yes, exactly like a puppy. Like, why do people think that you can toilet train a puppy, but there's no way you could toilet train a baby before it's 2.5? Like,
it's like that association, isn't it? You associate them with, instead of with going in their nappy, it's more wherever you, like a bucket or outside or, yeah.
Toilet place. Yeah, yeah, totally. And it's so bizarre to me that, like, as a society, we train kids to go in their nappy, and then at some arbitrary age, like 2.5, we train them out of it again. Like, it's, you know, if you just go from the beginning when they don't want to go in a nappy, they don't. Like, everyone knows that when you put a fresh nappy on a baby or you have them on the change table, they'll pee on you. That's because they don't want to go in their nappy.
Exactly.
They're really so much happier to do it when they don't have a nappy on. So yeah, it's you know, to me it seems quite obvious, but it was still one of the most mind-blowing things that I learned about when I was doing all my reading and learning about parenting. And you know, I read a lot of books, and I don't feel like almost anything blew my mind. I was, you know, reading conscious parenting books and all these things and going, yeah, but that's just obvious, isn't it? I mean, that's yeah. just parenting. Like, why wouldn't you do that? And then found elimination communication. And of course it's obvious, but I was still like, whoa,
yeah.
whoa. Like, how do we not know this information? Like,
yeah. And how did I not think about this before?
Yeah, totally. Exactly. And you know, every like kids are in nappies longer and longer and longer at the moment. Apparently in the 50s, it was common for babies to be toilet trained by 12 months. In the 70s or 80s, it was about 18 months. Now it's 2.5 because we've got this, you know, science that says that they need to be old enough to consciously understand what's going on and make these decisions. And it just makes no sense. It's like, well, then how come it works in the other half of the world where people are not wearing nappies? Like, is there something about our Western babies that are just broken? Like, no, it makes no sense at all. So, yeah, I really, you know, I really hope it becomes a lot more common. Then it will be a lot more socially acceptable to see somebody letting their, you know, small baby wee in a garden bed on the side of the road or something. Yeah. And I'm sure it will. I think it's just about talking to people about it and spreading the word about it. And I would love to, you know, help people do that or teach people, or, you know, if there's some way that when I move back to New Zealand, if no one's doing it there, maybe I can run, you know, little groups or something to teach people about it. Cause I think that, yeah, it's just about finding out about it really. Once you do, you're on a roll, cause it's so easy. It's really not hard. It's not even overwhelming or full on or takes all your time. It's actually pretty simple. It's easier than cleaning dirty nappies all the time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So is there anywhere for people to get in contact with you that I could share in the show notes?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. I'm really in two minds about, well, I'm really leaning towards not sharing my kids on social media. I've really had a hard decision about this because I love following all these beautiful mums on Instagrams, and I feel like it's a beautiful place to connect with other people, but I just don't feel like I have Taj's consent, or I definitely don't have Taj's consent yet to put his face on social media. So yeah, as much as I'd love to have a beautiful mum blog and, you know, have all these gorgeous photos of my gorgeous little man, I really haven't put that much on Instagram since I had him, because he's my entire life right now, and you know, maybe a loaf of bread here and there or something. So anyway, I'm on Instagram. My handle's Soulsby with 4 E's at the end instead of a Y, and I'll send that to you and write it down. But yeah, so if anyone wants to follow me there, I'll definitely try and work out what I'm doing with that profile and what I'm going to share there.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing these experiences with us.
You're so welcome.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.